everyone. Welcome back to Highly Inspired. I'm Ella.
I'm Jordan.
Hey, guys. Welcome back this week. We have a lot of announcements we want to get you guys up to speed
with. Yeah, just bear with us for like 5 seconds and we'll be done. We're now fully on YouTube for sure, officially. I'm so excited. And we've actually gained a lot of new listeners, I think. So we want to just welcome you to our channel, to our podcast, and include a little more background on it. And then also just say thank you and to, I guess, just to subscribe if you're interested. Yeah. And yeah, we're going to keep doing this. So we're super excited to keep posting videos because it makes it more interactive. And we love to see the comments and stuff.
Yeah, this is our 30th episode, which is nuts. And if you look on YouTube, we've only done maybe like 5 or 6 episodes that have been like visual on YouTube. So yep. If you're interested in seeing the other ones, our link's kind of in the caption of the YouTube videos. And you're welcome to check out our website. Yep. And we have also entries as well. So we do written mm-hmm. projects as well as the podcast. So.
Yeah, I would say our website is everything Highly Inspired. And although we post episodes and have all those links on there, we have been expanding it into more of a written and overall journalistic approach to a lot of mediums of content. And I think that that's been A, super fun for us, B, a good way to attract other people that we know, other people in our network who have like knowledge on certain areas that maybe we don't, mm-hmm. so that we can sort of present that info mm-hmm. In a variety of ways so that like you can pick and choose what fits best for you.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely check out entries. Our website's in the bio here. And then yeah.
Yeah, for it. Sure. So for this episode, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things, but it's kind of under the umbrella of we're moving into kind of a decentralized world. And Jordan and I have definitely realized this, especially with COVID and kind of, you know, how it's thrust us into more of a digital space in terms of work from home and kind of the other things that we've talked about and this mm-hmm. kind of new normal post-COVID world that we're entering into. And, you know, there are some kind of scary things about entering a more digital world, but there also are some positives. And, you know, even with things like currency and NTFs, and we'll dive into that a little bit more, but we're kind of moving to this place where everything hopefully will move from, you know, the industrial age where things were more specialized into giving the power back to people to be more individualistic in mm-hmm. their careers and in their ways to make income for them, their family.
Yeah.
So.
No, this is definitely a lighthearted and exciting topic to be talking about right now, because all you hear in the news is doomsday info and current events that aren't actually, I guess, labeled uplifting. Positive, uplifting. Yeah, so it's been hard. But I think that as we're starting to really adjust and figure out this new world and what's going to be continuing for the next couple of years, I think that people are trying to wake up and rewire to make the most of things and capitalize on what's going on. So the decentralization is a symptom of that.
Yeah.
People starting to think about it in a different way.
For
so
sure.
Something that we have always talked about in our episodes and I think is a huge brand attribute to Elle and I as just humans, people, young people too. We are fans of generalism. I label myself as a generalist in a lot of ways, most especially in terms of like just random skill sets, how I think, how I sort of perceive the world and what I feel like can provide fulfillment in a lot of personalities if you're not just geared towards one career or one pathway to life based off of what your skill is. Mm-hmm. So it's cool being able to talk about this decentralization that's going on because I also think it goes completely hand in hand with the rise in generalism that we're seeing across people of all different age groups and all different industries. Mm-hmm. So we'll get a little bit into that too, but I just wanted to sort of explain that, yeah, the generalism aspect is a massive portion that has encouraged us to continue doing the show
and doing so many many topics and not being like as niche. Like when Jordan and I started the podcast, everyone gave us advice like, oh, you can only be a fitness podcaster. You can only be
pick your lane.
A sex podcast, or you can only be, especially as women, it was like, okay, you can either do sex, food and nutrition, or what? Like
crime. Talking about like crime cases or maybe even just self-help, that type of thing.
Yeah. And not that those things aren't interesting or worth listening to, but we were like, okay, we don't want to be limited in that capacity. And so we're going to, as Jordan said, we are generalists. We want this podcast to be about generalism. And that's why this topic is so exciting for us to dive into, because it's all about the decentralization of the world as we know it now. And it's going to create more opportunity for the average person. I truly believe that. And I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. And kind of a little bit of a pivot, but we kind of wanted to talk about the smokescreen kind of concept that we've been discussing, and kind of how that prevents progress in a lot of ways and kind of keeps people in power that want things to be more specialized and want individuals to continue to be cogs in the machine, whether that be corrupt capitalism or socialism, and kind of that example. I mean, you kind of coined the term, I would say, of that, if you want to
smokescreen. Yeah. Whenever I think of smokescreen, I legitimately visualize like a bee farm where, like, I'm not even kidding. I don't know why. Maybe I watched the
Bee movie. I think of a window that's foggy.
I think of that scene in the Bee movie where all the like bee peasants are in like the farm and they're like living these like fake sitcom lives.
Yeah.
And then like the smokescreen thing comes and poisons them. And that's just a total analogy. I did not even know that I remembered that. But so Elle and I are not CIA investigators. We do not have this insider knowledge.
We know nothing. But
we're making educated guesses, and we have continued to like start talking about this more and more and more because it's been easy for us to sort of try to, like, I mean, all the stuff that's been going on in the past year and a half, no one on this earth has not thought really deeply about a lot that's going on.
Yeah.
Or hasn't had one moment of that.
Of questioning it. And I think it's suspicious when the authority figures, and we've talked about this on previous podcasts, have stopped us from questioning things, especially with the pandemic stuff, especially with these politicians recently. Andrew Cuomo is a perfect example of that they're using the smoke screen of now bringing forth all of these sexual harassment allegations, which, yes, those are important. Those should be dealt with. There should be repercussions of that. However, that didn't get brought to light until after it got released that he was responsible for 15 plus home or
thousands of people
dying, elderly people in nursing homes. So that's kind of what I've learned, at least in the last few weeks, is part of that smokescreen dynamic is you have a story that's smaller that then covers up the bigger story.
Yeah.
And we were just watching the Meghan Merkel and Harry documentary, or not documentary, with Oprah interview.
Okay, before we get to that, because that's a huge segment in this episode, I want to add one thing that I sort of thought of the other day. Has anyone actually picked up on how every week there's a new fad trending story that's going on, and sort of how perfectly timed each has its like evolution? It's like a perfect roller coaster of, oh, we need a story. Another one comes out.
Dr. Seuss.
Oh, we need a story. Yeah, Dr. Seuss. Andrew Cuomo. It's been like that for the last entire year.
Yeah.
We have never not had something to be obsessing over. And it used to be before the pandemic that the stuff that we obsessed over when Trump. We didn't have anything, we would just either resort to Trump or we would resort to dumb award show drama or celebrity drama that was going on, and people would just go off on Twitter or sports.
Yeah.
So, but it's not been any of that recently.
It's been planted,
like, really
story.
Hefty, big name headline stories that are going on with political figures, with violence, with corruptness. And so you can't just say that that is just a coincidence, that all of this stuff is somehow going on in perfect timing so that there's no overlap.
Yeah, and something that Jordan and I have been realizing, especially this week, we have been, I wouldn't say it's not like full conspiracy theory, but I would say that we have been questioning things even more so than we normally do, and just realizing, okay, there is a true balance of good versus evil in the world that always has existed and continues to exist.
Yep.
And like how dark is dark, like what actually is out there, what, how evil are the forces at play. And now every time I see something that like I question, I'm like, why is that happening? That's so stupid.
You have to ask the why.
Like that doesn't make sense. Then I can just automatically think, okay, well, there's really evil stuff out there. Okay, that makes sense. That somehow ties into that entity. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I might be explaining that wrong.
No, you're right. I agree. I mean, there is, it's accepted by pretty much all religions that there's a balance between good and evil. I do believe that there's a spectrum as well.
Yeah.
Like, how good can you be and how evil can you be? However, I will never fully say that I believe that one person can only be entirely evil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the human beings were created with that balance, that you could only be one or the other. However, I would like to think that we're mostly good. Like, yeah. I think that that is the fact of our reality in this world. But yeah, what we've been talking about recently is just how exactly some of this stuff, if we're saying that there is a they, if we're saying that there is an institution,
some
group
sort
of people, deep state, global
deep state.
Whatever
you want to call it.
I would assume that most people know of the word deep state in the sense of America.
Yeah.
But I also think that it is existent in the sense of the entire world and all of our countries.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings us to the Meghan Markle and Prince Harry documentary.
Which I know is a weird transition, but bear with us. We'll make it make sense.
I put it off for about a week because I knew that I really wanted to like give it my full attention. And I purposely for all of last week decided not to watch any prior review videos. I just wanted to go into it with having zero like pre-influence beforehand. So we sat down and watched it at pretty much the perfect time. And we have a lot of takeaways that I would vouch that
I haven't heard
that the media
anywhere.
Wasn't really covering on in the way that we're thinking about it.
No, for sure. I listened to people. I kind of had a different take than Jordan. I listened to people review it before I watched it, both on the right and the left. And at first I was kind of agreeing. I saw both sides and I was like, okay, I feel like they're just being spoiled brats. I feel like they're overreacting, especially in COVID. Like there's bigger problems than you getting kicked out of the royal family or leaving the royal family. I thought they were just complaining and making stuff up or exaggerating or something. And then on the left, it was like this full taking their side to the full extreme and only talking about
Basically only
the racism
on
stuff. And not kind of uncovering what we saw, which was actually a lot is more on Prince Harry's side, but he made a lot of references to the institution.
The three words, the firm.
The
three words that he used the most that in both him and her repeated the most was the word security, was the word institution, and was the word contracts. Those were three words that kept being repeated. And it was sort of, and every time it was weaved into a sentence, it was like Harry was giving off a very heavy tone, very serious tone, very direct tone, choosing his words very carefully. And to me, it just sort of seemed like a cry for help.
Yeah.
Like there was serious fear in his demeanor while he was articulating that. And I think that I like how they did it where Meghan had her time with Oprah and they had the little gal pal sesh and then Harry got brought in and it totally took a turn. Like they were focusing on a completely different set of topics. We're just giving the recap just in case anyone hasn't seen it. But go on about the institutions and...
Yeah, so I think I started to pick up a lot more on it when Harry joined. As Jordan said, his tone was a lot more serious and it seemed way more believable and straightforward than Meghan. It wasn't on all these kind of tangents and it wasn't as vague. But it seemed like I know a decent amount about the British family. Obviously, I'm not British. I'm American, but I lived in London briefly. I've done a decent amount of research on the British family. Have looked into a lot of like Diana and Charles' relationship, which we can talk about that later. Yep. But what's interesting is Harry the whole time never spoke badly about his family, specifically the Queen and Prince Philip, which is the Queen's
grand. I don't think he threw a single shot at like a specific family member or really even the entire family as a whole.
And that's the problem, is that everything I saw previous to the interview in the media was like painting it as Harry and Meghan versus the royal family, when actually it seemed like royal family plus Meghan and Harry against the institution and against the firm, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had never thought about it in that light. I didn't realize that there was an institution running the royal family that was connected directly to the media, and there's this relationship between the firm, the institution of Great Britain, and the media, and it feels very much similar to some of the problems in the U.S. with, like, the president isn't the person in charge, ultimately, you know? Yeah.
Well, I think that we've known for at least all the 20th century that Parliament and the monarchy were separate, and I think that people would assume and agree that sort of Parliament took control of power just as much as the monarchy did when, like, Queen Elizabeth was...
Queen Elizabeth has never had coronated. Political power.
She's never had... But even before, it was already, like, an understanding within the UK, within the world, that Parliament was now taking over the governmental activities.
Yeah, Parliament has slowly been taking over the government activities. I don't know exactly when they fully took control, but it was before
Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth was coronated. However, this is, like, a third party. This isn't Parliament or the royal family.
Okay, that's what I was leading to.
Yeah, it's a third
so people
group.
Have always known that there were two entities. And there are two entities of Parliament and the monarchy. But I think that when people were watching this interview, there was a hint of hearing Harry talk about the institution as in inferring that it's just the family.
True.
And not that other power.
Exactly.
And so what we're trying to explain is that we think that it is that other power, but mm-hmm. we know barely nothing, really nothing about it.
And I tried to do some research, and I did find out a little bit on it, but it's really hard to find, like, all the secrets of it. Basically, like, what I could kind of gather from my research was, I don't have it off the top of my head. But yeah, basically it's a separate group, and they basically are the protectors of the royal family and kind of give them protocols on what they can and can't do. And it sounds very similar to lobbyists in a way, mm-hmm. just people that have political power outside of being directly an elected official. Mm-hmm. So that's the best way that I could describe it. And some of the quotes that they said that really stuck to me were that made it seem like this is a separate thing. This isn't the royal family when they say the firm or the institution, was when Harry said they're two separate things and it's important to be able to compartmentalize that because the Queen, for example, has always been wonderful to me. So it's this clear, like, they made it very clear that they're two separate entities. And it seemed like they were fearful of the institution and the firm, which is why words like security were so often used, because when they did move to Canada and they weren't able to gain security because they were no longer considered royal under UK, and the Canadians didn't want to pay for taxes for them to have security, it felt almost like a threat, because they were like, okay, is this firm going to come after us for leaving and causing such a scene, you know, because we know too much now.
Well, if the word security was mentioned by Meghan or Harry at least once in that entire interview, I probably would have looked over it and just thought, oh, like, they're super famous. They're just part of, like, the most famous family in the entire world.
Yeah, they just don't want people going in their house.
Yeah, they don't want some intruders. They don't want robberies, anything like that. They obviously have a kid, and Meghan is pregnant. So I get that. But when it got to the point where they were using it as every justification for why they
did what they
continued
did.
To leave. Yeah. That why they are now living in America and not a part of the royal family whatsoever. That's what really woke me up to thinking, okay, they're not just hiding from average Joe UK fans. They're not hiding from LA like teenagers just trying to go and get a TikTok video of them through their window. Like, they're hiding from bad people that they know of are capable of doing
men probably in gray some, suits probably was another some, word.
Exactly. Yeah. They're capable of doing probably some very extreme things. And so then you bring up questions about Diana, and then you bring up questions about,
was she murdered?
Harry, another quote he said was, after their Australia tour, which was, I guess, the turning point for him in terms of really considering their exit from the royal family, he made a quote saying that he started seeing an unraveling of events that very similarly mirrored the events of Diana and Charles's experience after they had already had a child. And he didn't want to repeat history. He felt like he was like seeing a repeat of history.
Yeah.
And that was so chilling, because hearing from him, who obviously we know like didn't even have a mother for most of his adolescence.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine what toll that took, that whole scandal took on him. And then to start facing that in your real adult life with like the woman that you love, like, I can't even imagine how much stress that would be.
Yeah. And for anyone who is unfamiliar, Charles and Diana had their first tour kind of as a married couple with William as a baby was in Australia. And then Meghan and Harry had a similar tour in their marriage. And that's when things started to go really south for Charles and Diana. Diana like broke in terms of her fame. Like, her fame got exponentially greater.
She was more popular than he was.
Exactly. And it caused him to be resentful, and he already was still in love with Camilla, and it just kept driving their relationship further and further down south. And there are, I didn't realize this because we weren't alive when Diana died. I think she died 2 years before we were born, but there's actually conspiracy theories that she was murdered, and it's not fully far-fetched. Now, I'm not someone that believes anything until it's fully proven, but what I do know about it, the story doesn't seem to fully make sense. It's partially blamed on like a drunk driver, partially blamed on the paparazzi. It feels a little unclean, and and kind of Tim Dillon talked about it on his Patreon, his most recent one, and it made me realize that if Harry has any sort of doubt, and I'm not saying that the institution of the firm was behind his mom's death, but if he has any sort of doubt that something sketchy might have transpired, I could see even more why he would be so overly protective of Meghan and Archie, if that's the case.
Oh, completely. Yeah, because he's probably witnessed it firsthand and probably is withholding information even from Meghan because he feels like
she
has to protect both
of
them.
She's more ditzy than him, which makes sense why she's talking about like, she talked about the race stuff too much. Like, I didn't think that was really as relevant. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, they went through the examples of, I guess, this supposed royal family members asking about what colored skin their baby would have, which I understand that is actually a really important detail for just understanding how the series
got
of events
escalated.
I do think that's important. But it seemed like Meghan was more so focusing on like the surface level trivial things.
The flower girl dresses.
Yeah, the like little family debates, the tabloid headlines that seemed like scary and threatening, which I guess if you are only seeing that the tabloids are, like say you were Meghan Markle during that time where she had already, after they already got married, all these tabloid headlines are coming out saying that she was from like Compton, or there was one that said Meghan Markle is straight out of Compton. Like, that's
one that called her baby like a chimp, which is horrible.
Exactly. So those are actually terrifying headlines. But do you think that that's enough to really have Prince Harry like really think about how big of a deal it is that he left that family?
Yeah.
The first time that is ever happened.
Well, it's not the first time it happened,
but of his lineage and being like, I mean, he wasn't married into Like, he is it. He's a part of the family.
Yeah, I mean, it did, the throne did get abdicated before Queen Elizabeth's uncle abdicated the throne. That was last time it had been, like, fully abdicated. But it is strange because he doesn't seem to have any issues with his family. Like, if there was any issues, it seems to just be fallout from deciding to leave. But it didn't seem like his relationship with his dad or the queen or his brother were the cause of why they left. It seemed to be the press, the institution, the firm, not giving them security, not protecting them, not letting them seek help, especially Meghan when she was going through her suicidal period. That made more sense to me than just what Meghan was saying, I guess.
Okay, yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. And it was good to see both sides because I did like the background that Meghan gave and what the new etiquette and princess school issues, what that like allowed her to feel, which ended up transpiring into her being very depressed and having suicidal thoughts that she needed to get help for. So I actually was very interested in hearing that because I never really knew that much about it. But I thought that the second half of the interview was a lot more interesting and a lot more read between the lines-ish. But it was, I would encourage people if you watch that,
at least watch the last 20 minutes.
Pay very close attention to the wordage and the tone, and just the entire phrasing of how Harry was explaining the actual like catalyst.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because they explained, and we'll wrap up this segment here soon, but they explained the connection between the firm and the media as well, and how if you wanted to have good press coverage, you had to wine and dine the media, you had to take them out, you had to give them compliments. It seemed very obvious the media there, as it is in the US, is corrupted. And what's interesting is that Prince Charles and Prince Andrew both have had their own scandals, especially Prince Andrew with his ties to Epstein and having relationships with underage girls. And the fact that that's never been uncovered by the media just, I think, shows. And the fact that Ghislaine Maxwell, that hasn't been uncovered by the British media. Those two examples prove to me that if you're high up and well connected in British society with this firm, you can't be touched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they know, too, to also have other stories to distract people.
Such as the Meghan one.
Such as that. To distract from, say, the Prince Charles stuff that's never even been fully explained or closed out.
Yeah.
So, I would encourage people to be skeptical of that, too.
Yeah. And another thing we were thinking about is that if anyone doesn't know, Prince Charles is very involved with the Great Reset and the globalist movement, which we have.
Yeah. He's attended Davos, which is the yearly World Economic Forum conference. Mm-hmm. And very intertwined with Klaus Schwab, George Soros, the other like public globalists that we know of.
Yeah. And I would say the reason why I feel like smoke screens are so powerful, and even like the Meghan and Harry example being one where we're focused on the right viewing it as them complaining, and the left viewing it as an opportunity to have Meghan be painted as a social justice warrior. If we can see through that and get the decoded message, that's what's going to make us powerful as individuals and be able to band together against these institutions that continue to want us to be specialized. And because the more specialized we are, the less we question things and the more that we are just a cog in the greater machine, and we will never gain independence to be financially independent. And so I think
we'll be forever subject until we realize that we object.
Exactly. So it's really important with everything, whether it's Meghan Merkel or, you know, Meghan and Harry or the Great Reset or whatever it is, COVID, you're always trying to find what's the bigger story under this screen. And you're also trying to grow your skill sets to become a generalized person so that you're just more equipped and more knowledgeable to take on the lies of the world.
Yeah. And also in reference to the word decentralization, which obviously is a focus right now, in a way, by Harry leaving and all of these like changes occurring in one of like the most centralized like trusted, what we thought of reliable institutions, like there is a lot of change going on.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is a massive point in our history, and I will continue to follow it because it is, yeah, it's really, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. And
and also another thing, I don't know if people know, but Prince Charles is right now the heir to the throne. It's not 100% verified that he's going to pass it to William or not. And so I would also encourage people to do some more research into Charles, because that will he probably is likely to be the heir until proven otherwise. He's passing to William.
Yeah. And
so that's just a very
Queen Elizabeth is getting up there in age. Yeah. So there's
what's
that.
She 91 93. She's not like 99, but
she's 95.
95.
Yeah, she's
holy.
Old. But yeah, and I think it'll be interesting. And going off of the Great Reset, I do think that there's this push, especially with COVID, for us to be more in love with the digital world versus the physical world. And we'll get more into this with like the NFT stuff and Bitcoin and stuff. And I don't think all of it's bad, but I do think Tim painted a really great picture in his Patreon episode where he just said, he sees us moving into this space almost like in the movie WALL-E, where everyone is in their cube and has all digital assets, and you are very, very minimalistic, and you're more interacting with the digital world versus the physical world. And again, I think that part of that's cool, but also part of that could be contributing more to not decentralizing things enough. I don't know.
Well, you are right that the WALL-E the WALL-E imagination image is definitely a good thing to attach to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it'll be materialism taking a totally different form, mm-hmm. because I think materialism is something, it's a temptation that for some reason humans had, and it manifests through greed. I think greed of having more, greed of having nicer, greed of having better things.
Yeah.
And so if none of these physical things are what we desire anymore and it's solely digital, doing certain things in certain ways and saying certain things in certain ways in order to boost your valuation or your materialism valuation in the mm-hmm. digital world as opposed to the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
Like the example you gave the other day of, say, a girl or an influencer, social media influencer, who is deliberately planning like a restaurant outing just to solely go and post take a photo and post the photo.
Yeah.
So that's like the motive. It's not, I actually want to go to this restaurant solely because I want to get their food and just like hang out there. That the more superior reasoning behind it is because they want to get a photo for it. So that's like boosting their digital presence as opposed to their physical presence.
Yeah. And I wasn't going to get into this yet, but we might as well, while we're here, like talk about it. But with NFTs, do you see this as like a phase, or do you see this as a long-term thing similar to what we were in the room with Jake Paul and David Spade and Tim Dillon, where they were discussing NFTs?
My favorite Clubhouse room so far. I could not even believe that I was on like the other line as David Spade at like a live real
it was
point
pretty,
in time.
It was his first one too.
Just blowing my mind.
But yeah, what's your take on what Jake Paul was saying about how we're at the cusp, being at age 20, we're 21, 22, we're at the cusp of still growing up with the physical world somewhat involved. Like our first phones weren't iPhones, but if you go even people 2 or 3 years younger than us, their first phones were iPhones. They grew up with social media. They don't know what it's like not to have social media. Do you think that they're going to get sick of it and fully reject it? Or do you think that they're going to be way more interested in the NFT stuff?
Okay, I think something more in between. I think that it's a combination of right now it's a fad and it's super trendy and popular. I think that it will die for a little bit, but then it'll kickstart and then really slowly build, but for good.
Okay.
So I don't know when, I don't think it'll ever fully stop, but I think that right now it's a really huge fad. It's going to die for just a little bit, but then it's going to start from like a very real and authentic non-fad exponential growth and then become like actual part of the norm.
Okay. Gotcha.
Because I think that we're still testing the waters, and there's a lot of people that are that don't have any knowledge on it yet. Mm-hmm. So it's obviously I don't think it's going to be a continuous growth from right now at this point in time.
Yeah, I guess we should also explain what an NFT is, just in case anyone doesn't know.
Okay. I want to rename NFTs, by the way.
I think it's a terrible name.
It's a very techie and software engineering type of descriptor, but it stands for non-fungible tokens. Mm-hmm. And tokens are in the form of art collectibles, digital square collectibles, images, even games, animations, GIFs. That's what we know of so far, but it could go way more beyond that. It could turn into websites. It can turn into like full-blown apps.
For sure.
Anything digital that could be a collectible featuring some sort of like visual nature to it.
Yeah.
I think that's probably like the best way I could describe it right now. Although I'm not an expert.
It's crazy there, but like some of them have been sold for multi-million dollars. Like it's pretty gnarly.
Oh, the amount of money that is getting thrown into this space right now is actually absurd.
It's crazy how much of like a tradition or a transitional period we're in right now. Some argue that we're in a fourth industrial revolution or era, I guess, but mm-hmm. I would actually argue that we're in an information era, and I think the information era is going to actually reverse the industrial revolution in the 20th century.
Okay.
And this is kind of an idea that Naval and Joe Rogan were discussing on the podcast back in 2019, but he was saying, which makes a lot of sense to me, and this is what I've always thought about automation and the reason, you know, kind of when that kind of came up with Andrew Yang and UBI and stuff. And his argument against UBI is that basically we are going to just keep innovating and coming up with jobs that we can't even imagine. 10 years ago, you would have never thought that podcasting was going to be a career, or that people could get paid to be professional TikTokers. We're going to keep, as we keep innovating and getting written and automating jobs that people don't want to do, we're going to instead make it so that people are going to have more creative jobs, and there's going to be an expansion of creative jobs. Even if you think about how many people now are graphic designers compared to 50 years ago, it's an insane number. And something that he brought up is that when the internet hit, it slowly reversed the industrial revolution, because it's kind of taken away the 9-to-5, us being a cog in the machine, us having to work on this tight schedule for a big corporation, and made it more generalized and freedom and freelancing and gig economy stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like it was the introduction of people being able to do jobs that weren't necessities, but jobs that were maybe a little more loose and more geared towards like a person's interest, as opposed to them having to because they needed to make a certain salary or something.
And once he said that, it made me realize, we talked about this in the last episode, but the attack on the gig economy with things like AB5 and how they're now trying to take that to the national level.
Yeah.
What if that isn't just because they're like, oh, we want to like have benefits for people? What if that's lobbyists in the background that are like, okay, the gig economy, freelancing, people being able to be podcasters, all these things are threats to corporate America and everyone being a cog in the machine? We need to slow this down. And I started thinking about that question, like, oh my gosh, is this...
If they want us to continue being cogs in the machines and numbers amongst this massive piece of land, country, they probably wouldn't want us to be in happy career positions where we're able to express ourselves creatively, because that's when humans are functioning at their healthiest, most fulfilled level, especially like creatives, because I label myself as a creative. I think there is also a spectrum to it.
Yeah.
But anyone who has any creative like endeavor, desire whatsoever, you know how hard it can be to try to think of that being taken away from you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think of that.
It was slowing down the...
With the internet, because that totally opened the door for every creative outlet.
It's slowing down by them attacking the gig economy of things like AB5. It is slowing down the decentralization of the 9-to-5, of the corporate job, of big companies. And what Naval was talking about with Joe was that he was saying the only reason, the biggest difference between why you have a small company versus a big company is it cheaper to have the jobs done internally versus externally? So like, let's say you and I were looking to hire an assistant. Is it easier to make them part of Highly Inspired as a corporation and we pay them benefits and everything on salary? Or is it cheaper to pay someone hourly through a third party site that's like a freelancer, right? So you do that analysis and then you decide whether you take on the person or not. And that's why you have small companies and big companies. That's one of the main reasons.
It's customizable.
Yeah. And so what he was saying is that as it's become cheaper and cheaper to hire people through freelancing and it's empowered people, that's been such a threat to big organizations because it allows people to be just as efficient as them, if not more efficient, with less people. And it's kind of making us become more tribalistic and more hunter-gatherer type.
This has been a trend that even happened before. This has been developing and increasing way more so before the pandemic, but for some reason people are only realizing it now because with remote work and people really having to figure out their own schedules, their own workflows and discipline and all of that, people started paying a lot more attention to the new state of how people are actually like functioning effectively. And so, especially in like industries where they are, like, I guess any industry, like, they're noticing it now.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine with saying bye to 9 to 5, by the way, because I personally feel like that is very restrictive. For some people, it might work well, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just speaking from what my workflow is best. But
I agree. And there's been so many studies that they even backed this up in their conversation, was that people are best as generalists. People are best when they fit as many like careers into their life as possible.
Yeah.
Like when people are able to challenge,
we want to push ourselves.
Yeah, you're more than one.
If you're a specialist in one area, there's going to be a cap to that where you're going to get bored and that might turn into a mental instability where you feel depressed and not fulfilled anymore because you know everything. Mm-hmm. You already know everything. You're the best. You're the brightest in that area. So you would definitely have that unspoken desire to do something else.
And if you think about the best innovators and artists of our time, Frank Sinatra is another great example. They always are innovating. They always, the minute they mastered something, they're like, okay, I'm going to start from scratch to do the new thing. Whether it's Frank Sinatra with a new
Leonardo
sound.
Da Vinci, Shakespeare, like all the composers, they had genius skill sets in a variety of domains. And that's why they are who they are. Even Benjamin Franklin, the dude did it all.
Yeah.
He was a math whiz, a science whiz, a philosopher, diplomat, exactly. These are the most remarkable people in our entire history, and we're remembered, or we remember them for a reason, and it's that reason.
And people who are powerful, people that are in touch with dark forces that we kind of talked about, anything in deep state, institutional related, they know this. They know that humans are at their best when they aren't confined at 9 to 5. They know humans are at the best when they have the ability to do multiple things. They know the science behind us being multifaceted things, and they are purposely, I'm not saying the Industrial Revolution started because of this, but I think it's continued, and there's been an attack on the gig economy because they realize that it's such a threat to how we've been doing things for the last 100 years, and we have the opportunity to reinvent the wheel in a way, and kind of, especially as we become more global, we realize, like, again, it's kind of like the too many options thing. Like, we have so many freedoms now, and we did an episode on that. And it is stressful in a way because you do have to manage all of that. But if you can figure out how to do that, oh my gosh, like, your life's gonna be so much better.
Yeah, you're like the biggest threat to them out of anyone if you not only recognize that, but know how to take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. So Ella and I a few days ago came across, so we listened to Flagrant 2, which is a podcast that Andrew Scholes hosts, and basically they had Alex Jones on, and Jones hasn't done something in a while, I don't think.
I haven't seen him since Joe Rogan.
I think Joe Rogan might have been the last one. And we're not like Alex Jones like fans or whatever, but we listened in just because he doesn't do that all the time.
Yeah.
Just to like hear, you know, get a hint.
It was like, also like an interesting like dynamic. I was interested to see how that would play out.
They had a good energy. It was upbeat, entertaining for sure. And I like to hear like the comedy behind it too.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, not to go on a tangent, but Schwartz is like, dude, if you just presented yourself as a comedian, you could get away with
shit that you wouldn't have had. Yeah, true. Like Tim, maybe. Yeah. But he's Alex and him are totally different ball games. But Alex was a portion where he was talking about some of these. How do I even explain it?
Dark alien
he coined the word alien, and then he was also talking about like idea pathogens, and so I guess how we could sort of
multidimensional
creatures. He thinks that aliens are not just like cellular beings that we could wrap our heads around, because everything on life or everything on Earth that is life here is cellular. Like, that's the one thing that we all have in common. Mm-hmm. He thinks that there's a likelihood that in these other dimensions that we don't even have the capacity to understand, because our brains are only narrowed to three, that there are aliens that are within these multi-dimensions that are either invisible or in the form of ideas or in the form of demons, if we want to get religious with it. Mm-hmm. That are causing certain people to behave and enact certain agendas right now. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that was fascinating, because I've never really thought of aliens in that way. I am one of those people that always sort of figured it would be a cellular being composed of like being able to breathe to an extent, having eyes to an extent. But no, it could totally be something that we can't even see.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you think about when there has been alien appearances, and I guess the U.S. government has confirmed that aliens, UFOs do exist, right?
Well, UFOs doesn't necessarily need to be aliens. It could be an unidentified flying object from another country that they just don't know. They have to investigate where that's coming from. Okay. And a lot of times they trace it back to like a certain location that it launched from.
I just feel like there's a lot that we don't know.
Think we have not met aliens yet.
I feel like if you have seen something, okay, let's say the aliens are can exist in another dimension, then I think it's possible for you to be able to see it briefly and then it disappear potentially. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. But I did find what he said interesting. Because if you think about a lot of people, a lot of like religions or spiritual belief systems, or even just morality, like the struggle of good versus evil. And if you do believe that those energies exist in the world to some extent, I did find it interesting him equating that with some sort of physical other dimensional form. Mm-hmm. Obviously that hasn't been scientifically proven, but I do think it's an interesting concept just to think about, especially in terms of what people are influenced by. And
I don't know if you could label that a conspiracy theory, some sort of prediction, some sort of, just a theory that he has. Like, I wonder if he actually thought about that
something triggered it. Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, just going off of, I guess
one last thing that I wanted to tie with that, in terms of the idea of pathogen stuff that could be invisible, that's why certain bad things are in this world right now. I have noticed that. Well, okay, it could be that. It could be that there are these aliens, right? But I also, I'm so sorry. I totally just forgot what I was going to say.
No, you're good.
No, I'll remember.
Okay. Well, what I was
trying to save it, but I couldn't.
You're good. You're good. But what I was going to say is that going back to just kind of like evil energies and evil ideas and kind of dark spirits, I do think the idea of socialism being good, which we've talked about, I forget which episode we talked about like socialism and capitalism, but.
Great. No, I think it was Great Reset. Yeah.
But I do want to like stress this enough. It's sad that people don't realize that 100 million people plus have died from socialism, and that we still keep thinking that that is the solution to corrupt capitalism. And I don't disagree that corrupt capitalism happens. I know it happens in the US.
I think people are just convinced that like we shouldn't be looking at the past to like rewrite our wrongs. But yeah. I think that the past is probably the best guide out of them all. Mm-hmm. Because if something isn't working, well, the definition of insanity is going back and back thinking that it's going to have a different outcome. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't.
Yeah. And I think if you do look at the past, let's look at what's worked outside of capitalism, right? What was a time that, or not, sorry, outside of socialism, what was a thing that actually worked to increase people's freedoms and flexibilities and maximize their experience with the physical world? Okay. The bad things about capitalism are banks being bailed out all the time. And all it does is bankrupt the population, aka what happened to us in the 08 crisis, yeah. Right? Monopolies are bad. What we're seeing with tech companies, Amazon, et cetera. It's been exacerbated with COVID, and those companies are in line with the Great Reset and socialism. So that doesn't make sense. Like socialism is bad because those people are linked to that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what's bad with capitalism. Okay. So what can we do to fix it? Decentralize it. Make it so that you give more power to the people, whether that's Bitcoin, whether that's cryptocurrency, whether that is eliminating the 9-to-5, whether that's increasing gig economy.
Those
are the conversations we need to be having. Why don't we retract to a time before the Industrial Revolution where we weren't used as cogs in the machine for monopoly countries? But companies. We actually use capitalism to live freely, own our own land, grow our own vegetables. Why can't we revert back to that? And this is the opportunity to do it as the information age has launched us to be able to reverse the industrial
rate. So it's decentralizing capitalism.
Yeah.
Which arguably has never really been
talked about
and obviously hasn't been around in America anytime before now.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not even there yet, but it looks to be that we're heading towards that way. Mm-hmm. It could be stopped. Mm-hmm. But the more people that are starting to have these conversations and that sort of can start seeing it in that way, we might continue to go more towards that.
And capitalism is just it's an offshoot of the concepts of free markets and free ideas. And it's an offshoot of freedom. So if you're against capitalism, then you're ultimately against freedom. And I'm not saying there aren't issues with capitalism, but if you say that now I don't want to use that system and I want to use socialism, then what you're saying is that you don't want freedom. And it's like, why?
I think that's the easy way out. Like, yeah. Why is it so much easier and more convenient for people to wrap their heads around just saying, oh, this doesn't work, let's do the exact opposite? Mm-hmm. No, why don't we look a little bit more intuitively and measure up the factors that aren't fully balancing out and figure out solutions to balance them out without like fully abandoning it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's similar to like the cancel culture stuff or even just like the race relations stuff.
We just jump to the opposite extreme.
I feel like, for example, let's say we're trying to solve police brutality against like black people or whatever. Let's say that is the thing that we're trying to solve, or trying to solve racism. Going after someone, like when a white, social justice warrior goes after another white person who is, I don't know, less educated about a tiny terminology, virtue something very small that isn't actually like a racist incident, that's detracting from solving racism and fixing, identifying the racist. It's the same thing with capitalism. When you aren't looking at, okay, what are the holes in the system? Let's address monopolies. Let's address big tech. Let's address decentralization. And you're like, oh, let's bring up socialism.
Yeah. Like, no, let's fill those holes and then see if it works.
And then we'll talk and about then socialism.
If it doesn't, then we'd maybe go more towards arguing for socialism.
Yeah.
But let's do that first. Now that we have built this whole thing here.
Exactly.
Let's not just tear it all down because it took a long time to build it. and just abandon, you know?
Exactly.
I agree. Especially, and I think another big thing that people, how they perceive capitalism is they always are constantly thinking about the monopoly thing. They're thinking about, oh, this is just for companies. This is just for the aristocrats, the elites, like continuing their business success. But the elites
want socialism.
Like that's what I feel like people genuinely attribute to that. Just even thinking or reading that word, that's what pops into their head. So maybe with this decentralized capitalism, we can start to more keep in circulation the very real reality. And honestly, what I want to have happen where we're all just our individual entities. It's not on that grand scale anymore. People are retracted more down to earth. Like you said, hunter gatherer type of esque lifestyle.
Prairie lifestyle. Like think about the 1800s when people were like going and doing their own thing and space between each other and not in these congested areas.
Exactly. So it's like we'll still get to have all these benefits of like technology and access and resources and good food, good utilities. We'll still get to have all this stuff, but we can coordinate our lives the way we want to, according to the schedules we want to, not with the 9-to-5 time frame work daily routine, you know. So yeah, it'll be a lot more customizable and preferential to the person. So, but it's still along the lines of capitalism and fitting with the work that we've already made to get us here.
Exactly. And something that's interesting that you bring up with like decentralizing the 9-to-5, and you were educating me about this earlier this week, was the masculine versus the feminine spaces. And I think that this is actually something that allows us to like being a little bit more feminine, being more, at least in more neutral space, because it allows us to all be us, to be as creative innovators contributing to society as possible, but also do it from home in a way that is decentralized and allows us to have more of a homework balance and doesn't make us clock in at these times. And ultimately it's gonna be better for feminism as well. I mean, we talked about in our feminism episode how the biggest hole in the movement is that we never solve the problem of women being able to have families and work. And this is the solution to that, is this decentralized, system.
Any male or female, since we all are, understands that like we both have like capacities for expressing a more feminine energy or expressing a more masculine energy. Pretty much the entire workplace or traditional workplace setting that we've developed over the last, especially since the Industrial Revolution, has been very geared towards women assuming the masculine more so than men assimilating the feminine energy. And so like what you were saying, when women are going to work 9-to-5, they're having to perform in that more masculine-esque energy for the entire day. And then when they come home, they're more in their maternal feminine state. Maybe they're married, so I don't know. It's just really interesting. Stressful. It's interesting to think about, because I've never really thought of it that way. I think on average, most of the time, I am more so in the masculine energy, even though it doesn't feel draining to me. I think that I've either gotten used to it or I've just evolved in this society to be more like that, because like that's just been a norm for women for a very long time. So I think that it would be a really cool change to see that balance out a little bit better. And so maybe that'll help, I bet, a lot of marriages.
And children.
And then better for children. So, yeah, that's sick. Let's, like, have that happen.
Yeah, I really, these are the positives of it. This is what's exciting. This is what we need to work towards. We need to work towards generalism, decentralization, and asserting, taking advantage of all the opportunities, all the technology that's available at our fingertips that gives you so many opportunities.
And also change just the entire concept of work, because I mean, you hear people at work complain like, oh, I'm at work, like work is work. Well, it is work, but what if we could like fully uproot that and attach it to like, oh, like that's work, like this is great, like I am, or maybe not even, maybe we have a different word, just like, what do you do? It doesn't need to be.
Naval said, I forget the quote he said, but he had a very great quote that was like, find something that gives you like, that ignites your curiosity the most, that you can figure out how to get paid for. Like, it's not the extreme of do what you love, and it's not the extreme of you just need to like make money and be successful.
It's a blend of the two.
But it's a blend of the two. And also something that's interesting about...
We were also never taught how to figure that out in grade school either.
No, no one taught you that unless maybe your parents did, and that would be very rare. But another really interesting thing is this concept of input doesn't equal output, right? Work smarter, not harder. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think the gig economy being multifaceted teaches you, because you can do things more efficiently. You could, you know, you could be a freelancer for graphic. Let's say you are really good at Excel, but you're also really good at Adobe products. You could do freelance graphic design for 6 months, take a break for a month. If you save up your enough money, then you do modeling stuff for 3 months. Like, you can kind of imagine this world where there's this whole list of jobs and you just sign up start to finish, and it's like projects completed as opposed to signing contracts of time to work somewhere.
Not a whole year of your life and then realize, oh, I want to move and then start over again. It's sort of like a lot more immediate and a lot more dedicated towards like what that person is intended to do at that point in time, mm-hmm. based off of interest. And you, everyone knows this, interest and curiosity and just overall desire to do something will allow for an infinitely better output than if they weren't interested or passionate about it at all.
Oh, for sure.
Like, there is no, you can't, those emotions are not, like, you cannot force that. Mm-mm. Like, you just can't. Even if a boss tries to like ignite inspiration into you, it's very hard to do. Like, it really has to come from the person.
And also this concept of like building wealth. And I think people, even lawyers, like, even if you're being charged for your time, that's not accumulating wealth. Accumulating wealth has to do with investing. It has to do with saving, building businesses. You know, like, you can't just rely. I think Americans have been this concept of, okay, I'm just going to work this job and get my income and then use that to pay my expenses. There's no concept of growing wealth, right?
Having your money make money.
Exactly. And Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain, which you know a lot about, or a decent amount, is an avenue for people to be able to participate in decentralization of currency even, and grow their wealth in a way, even when we talked about the Robin Hood thing and people taking the side of the hedge funds, you know?
Let's take a moment just to reflect on like how big of changes we're talking about right now. The biggest change being the fact that we're still on lockdown, that we're not out of it yet. Other massive changes being the stuff with the royal family, the indications of the institutions, indications of these aliens, indications of decentralization in a majority of technological realms. So let's just take a breather for a sec, because I really do want to get into blockchain and Bitcoin, because I think that that is something very tangible and like we have data on it right now.
Yeah.
Like, when we're talking about this whole freelance economy and this decentralized capitalism, this is still in the works, I think, and we're moving towards it. But I mean, we're definitely not at that point yet where we can just go up on an app and be like, oh, what job do I want to do today?
No, that's very, that's
that'd
very
be very
forward,
cool.
It's very forward thinking. But I do think that if we continue to fight and work to develop generalist mindsets and continue to push to build our own careers and workspaces and us be our own agent, we could eventually get to that place, mm-hmm. at least in the next few decades, potentially, which could be really cool.
I think
cool.
You're right. You know what's funny is a couple weeks ago in January, I did an interview, and one of the questions in my interview, which is actually like a fun question, I was bummed I didn't have like a very good answer for it. They asked me, what would be like when you were a kid, what was your like dream job? And I feel like most people might know that. I for some reason like didn't have that, and I never really have known ever what my dream job would be. So it motivated me to put a little more thought into it. And I sort of came to the conclusion one day where I was like, I honestly think that my dream job would be exactly that, being able to do a bunch of different careers within short periods of time, depending on like what I felt geared to at that moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but that just, I think, is the best answer I could give, because How else do you merge fulfillment with all of these differing interests, with all of these different capabilities, with all of this desire for further fulfillment? How do you blend all of that with just a one specialized career? That there's just no way. So yeah, I just thought that was interesting. And we'll see if that continues to play out.
I hope so. It's exciting. And I don't know. I think that especially in the financial world, we're seeing a lot of decentralization with the NFTs, with the blockchain, with spec IPOs.
Yep. Okay. I found something very interesting. A stat about hunter-gatherers.
Okay.
So hunter-gatherers were not creators. Hunter-gatherers were people who actually went off and accumulated fruits, vegetables, foods, supplies. They accumulated them from the land. They didn't figure out how to be, they hadn't figured out agriculture yet, which is the creation of something. And so apparently 90% of human history, basically only up until 12,000 years ago, all humanity was only hunter-gatherers. How crazy is that? Like only, like literally only 10% of the entire human history was when we were, like we were hunter-gatherers for all of this time.
That, no, that's what I'm saying. Like
like how fast have we evolved?
We've evolved so fast, and I don't know if our bodies have caught up with how fast we've evolved. Just even the fact that everyone has the power to broadcast on social media, like you were talking about, a friend's mom or a friend of your mom's or something, who just like on Facebook is always broadcasting her stuff in this like kind of interesting light, I would say.
Oh, it's completely bragging about her kids. I don't think she knows how to be humble whatsoever.
Yeah, so I just, it's interesting.
But that culture has already been established on Facebook, and people think that it's just norm now, that no one ever thinks to rewire it and say, wait a minute, that's like kind of psychologically weird that people are doing this.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I found some other stats though that I thought were really interesting, because I think that we have this false understanding of like what hunting and gathering really is. Hunter-gatherers were not like the entrepreneurs. Hunter-gatherers were the very fundamental primitive like conception of humans. Foragers, however, were where we started to figure out, wait, we can make more of this. And so if you look at pretty much every other animal species on Earth, they are still hunter-gatherers. Like we're the only species that's figured out how to forage and like create more with resources that we already had.
Interesting. Like they haven't been able to innovate, essentially.
Like maybe I'm trying to think of like some animals that do things like that are very
have utensils. That's it.
Yeah, but they have not figured out agriculture. They have not figured out fire. And apparently the biggest turning point for the evolution of the human brain was when we figured out fire, because apparently when we started cooking our food, cooked food is easier for the stomach to digest. And so digestion isn't just how quick the food like exits your stomach, but it's also how well nutrition, the nutrients are actually absorbed. And so apparently the cooked food being able to be more easily digestible, it allowed better nutrients and more nutrients to go towards the brain. And so over time, the brain actually expanded and developed solely because we were getting more and better nutrients from cooked food as opposed to raw food. Like how crazy is that? Apparently really that's like a huge thing, that not only fire gives us warmth, but like, nutrients. When we figured out how to actually cook food, that's the catalyst for like why our brain is so much
more. It also allowed us to be able to like purify the food as well.
But at that time, I would assume if they had been eating raw food for so long, like the body had already adjusted to that.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's more so, like the fact that our brains, like this obviously didn't happen overnight, but over like a significant amount of years, like it like literally grew in size.
It's insane.
So yeah, I'm done with the hunter-gatherer thing, but I just wanted to sort of also clear that up to my for myself, because I always kind of I kept using that term hunter gatherers in the sense of like more entrepreneurship, freedom, egalitarian esque nature. But I now know the real definition that the hunter gatherers weren't the smart people that made humans who we are today. It's like the actual foragers that really took advantage of agriculture.
And agriculture was like one of the biggest inventions of all in human history.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, agriculture came before fire too, I think. Okay, anyways, let's move on. I think we're going to keep this all in one episode. This might be a longer one. But for anyone that's made it this far, hope you're enjoying it.
Yeah. I think we covered most everything except for like the Bitcoin stuff, right?
Yeah, I want to touch on that just a little bit because I think that... I mean, Bitcoin, everyone knows what Bitcoin is now. People know it's cryptocurrency, that overall cryptocurrency.
What's it at now? Like 60K?
60K for just one.
Pretty gnarly.
Bitcoin. Yep. I don't know what the finite number of them is, but I think that all of them have been mined already.
Okay.
So what I understand, so I did some research this week on blockchain technology because I knew that blockchain was attached to Bitcoin, that's what Bitcoin is based off of in terms of valuation. Mm-hmm. And Bitcoin was the first sort of project endeavor that utilized blockchain.
Okay.
So that is why Bitcoin is so valuable right now. And that's why it probably will always be like the most leading crypto is because it's the pioneer. Like that's just similar with a lot of different inventions and like services. The first one is normally the one that people are like most interested in for some reason. Mm-hmm. Well, blockchain goes way beyond crypto and way beyond Bitcoin. And it's literally going to be one of the biggest important factors with this decentralization initiative reality. And it's because it's getting involved in every single industry. It's involved in insurance. It's going to be involved in banking. It's already involved in so many areas where computer system databases already exist. Mm-hmm. And what it's doing is it's unfortunately taking intermediary people out of jobs, out of management, customer service, software engineering jobs, but it's actually allowing them to find other career opportunities that might be more geared towards the creative or might be more geared towards what they want to do and not a job.
Okay.
So I think that it's really great in that way. And also the technology behind blockchain is it is intrinsically decentralized. Mm-hmm. There is no entity that can govern.
There's no bank.
Once you write the code and run the software for blockchain, it is irreversible. Mm. It can be appended. It can be changed very specifically. And like it is hard to do, but you cannot reverse it. So say, for example, an insurance company wants to cut their staff and wants to implement blockchain technology to like run the public's like just day-to-day insurance questions, day-to-day insurance like activities or whatever. They can start running the software, gets rid of all these people. But once it's there, it's very hard to get rid of.
Okay.
And so that's why with Bitcoin, when you make that investment and you trade your US dollars or whatever for whatever valuation of Bitcoin, I think it's kind of like you're kind of stuck in that for a while.
I have a question. So I just bought Bitcoin like a few months ago.
Oh, but you did? It
was on a trading app.
Okay.
I didn't have to make a password.
What do you, you don't make a password. You get a key. Did you get a pass key?
I don't know.
Because that's the proof that you own a certain percentage of Bitcoin is if you get a key.
Well, how do I know if I get a key? I don't know.
What app did you use, by the way?
I think I used Robinhood. I didn't use Charles Schwab, but all my other portfolios in Charles Schwab.
Interesting.
So I'm worried that I didn't court record.
Because I was with my brother a lot this past couple months.
So he has a key?
And he did it through Gemini, which is a new like crypto platform started by the Winklevoss twins.
Okay, I do know about that.
And then Coinbase is also a really big
Gemini
one too.
Gemini is a really cool company. And you should, there's a ton of.
I have one, by the way.
Oh, account. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of open positions right now. It looks really cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's huge. They're growing. Because for some reason, people are trusting Gemini more than Coinbase. I don't know why. Well,
I mean, if you watch the Social Network, it doesn't take much to be like, I trust these two twins over Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. No, they were a lot more socially adept. And Mark was a sociopath. So, yeah.
He is a cyber.
And he screwed them over. So I feel bad for them. They're smart dudes.
Yeah.
They've put in some really good work. But, anyways, you should try to look into that, because if you really did, I mean, people are saying you're investing in Bitcoin, but you're really not. You're trading whatever your money is for like
Bitcoin currency.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just another medium of like a currency
exchange. Okay. That's a good way of putting it. What interests me is that why hasn't the US government tried to regulate Bitcoin or cryptocurrency more? Like, I'm very... That's a question
I
have.
It can't be regulated. For sure, Bitcoin can't. There are other cryptocurrencies that are managed by an entity or a company. Mm-hmm. But Bitcoin, Ethereum, Synthetics, and like several others are solely running from just this creation of code called the blockchain. Like, I sort of visualize it as... There was an algorithm set of code that created a digital Rubik's Cube that was impenetrable. Mm-hmm. It was amendable, but impenetrable. And then miners, who are also very knowledgeable, like tech software engineers, started mining through their code to unlock these pass keys.
Okay.
And so there's a finite amount of these pass keys, which correlate to whatever valuation at that point in time the Bitcoin is.
Gotcha.
And so I think that that's just like a good visual for it, because blockchain is so new. Like, there are actual like careers. Like, if you're a blockchain expert, like, it's not even software engineer anymore. Like, you got to be like a blockchain person. And so that's cool, because it's very new. And why Ethereum is actually the second leading contender to Bitcoin is because Bitcoin only has the blockchain in the sense of the crypto. Ethereum also has this blockchain that is capable of like other digital activities, i.e. insurance, contracts, legal system, technology. So it's like attached to a lot more than just crypto, than just like the Ethereum coin. So it's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So I get why there's a fad right now, because people know that this technology is so new, like, and cool, and I guess something fun to learn about. But I also totally get why people right now are very skeptical of like, where is this money going? What the heck is it? Also, a caveat to Bitcoin is that if you lose that passkey, it's gone forever.
Which now I'm stressed about.
You can't get it back.
Have you watched The Wallet?
No, I haven't.
Tim Dillon's The Wallet?
Oh. Oh, yeah. Well, oh, I thought you were talking about like a show.
No, but it's a trailer about it. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, like, that's the whole plot of it. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Like, what would you do? And if it's not,
it's going to be okay, Tommy. It's gonna be
okay. I don't know what, I think that can be solved in like future blockchains, but Bitcoin's blockchain.
Shoot, I got to figure out what my key is.
I know. I want you to find that.
I have like a bit of money in Bitcoin. So, okay. Well, I got to figure that out.
I mean, maybe.
I didn't think to like take a screenshot or something. So I got to, I don't know.
Maybe it might be in your Robinhood somewhere.
Yeah.
You just might have to like dig a little bit for it.
We'll see. But yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like we covered everything in terms of the decentralization, right?
Hold on. Let me look in. Yeah. I'm glad we included a little bit about the blockchain stuff, because that is a very tangible example of decentralization. And I really want it to stay decentralized, because I think that if it can keep this sort of trustworthy, no middleman, intermediary governing it, I think that people will continue to like trust that even more. Mm. And it's honestly going to allow people to not have to work these jobs that maybe they might not want to be working in.
Yeah, I just think it's cool, because I want to do more research into the history of the Fed and the history of institutional banking in America. So, because I know when America was set up, there was a lot of debate between, I think, what was the political parties? The Federalists and the Anti-Federalists at the time. Mm-hmm. I think those were the two political parties. Don't quote me on that. But like, Thomas Jefferson versus John Adams had way different opinions on how national banks should be set up. And I'd love to go back and reread my history on that, because it would help me kind of an interesting take on decentralized currency and kind of not having a nationalized currency that's tied to the decisions of the government. Because I'm like very stressed out about decisions right now and how that's tied to our currency and debt and all of that stuff. So if you can have something that, you know, we're used to being in a country where our currency is relatively stable and we haven't had hyperinflation in a really long time, but that isn't out of the realm of possibility, especially when the Fed rates, interest rates right now are pretty much at zero. So
The US dollar is tied to the activities that are happening within our economy and our government and the state of our country. So it's 100% centralized,
and imports and exports, and it also is, you know, then it's converted
it's also
to other currencies.
It's also like one of the most globally used and referred to. I think it's that and the yen. I think those are the two.
Yeah, well,
and the euro.
The pound is a lot.
Yeah, but for sure the US dollar is at least top two.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a given that people are losing faith in institutions. Mm-hmm. We don't want to even be dealing with them anymore. And so it makes sense why crypto and even blockchain. You don't even have to, with a blockchain running a software and helping you with your day-to-day activities, you don't even need to talk to a person.
For sure.
And if it's executed efficiently, you can just trust the computer. And I think that people are starting to trust computers even more so than humans right now.
Which is nuts. I mean, there's certain like procedures and medical procedures that computers are better at detecting certain tumors and stuff even.
It voids the human error.
Yeah.
And it probably saves a lot of time too.
For sure. Which hopefully will just free us to get to explore more creative careers that will be created.
Creative careers. Oh, that's a tongue twister.
I'm trying to be optimistic. I am pro decentralization in any way possible. I think it takes away power from the elite and gives it to the people, which we are all about on this podcast. We are for everyone, all types of people.
Freedom.
We
dispute about that.
That's just it.
And I hope that Meghan and Harry can have that sometime too.
I hope that the firm isn't after them.
Cut them some slack, guys. That after watching it, definitely painted a different picture of them to me, and I'm really glad that I did.
Yeah, I went into it with a negative mindset and came out, and I was like, "Oh, okay, I see."
Yeah, it exceeded my expectations in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll shut up, guys. Thank you for watching. If you made it this far, please make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel.
We would love that, so you can get notifications on new episodes.
Yes, I'm not 100% sure, but I think there's a button you can press that will notify you.
And check out our website too if you want to see some of our older episodes.
Yeah, totally.
For sure.
Thank you for watching.
Thank you so much.
Bye, guys.